Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island changed nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. Anybody else know another New Zealander who's got an American-based talk radio show? I didn't think so. The iniquity of the show is what you got to love. Okay, now, just want to get a few things out of the way before I go to my very special guest, Suzanne Posel. Friggin' Skype and their BS. The cheeky sod snuck four transactions of $16 Australian from my account without my authority, then suspended my Skype account when I halted the payments, which I didn't authorize. Then I couldn't pay for my Skype premium account, which allows me to kind of do video during my shows, because they suspended my account. So first they take my money without asking and then don't allow me to purchase their service. It took hours over 2 days to find any kind of support from them. In the end, I had to Google it and found that they have a Skype text chat type of thing with the staff, which was the only option. I couldn't call them because you can only call them if you have a premium account, which they suspended and wouldn't let me pay for. Ugh, retarded. But all is sorted now, although my throat is perhaps a little worse for wear, or hoarse for wear, after screeching at the computer screen so much. And I think many people understand the ramifications of screaming at technology. The technology doesn't seem to get any better, but for some reason you just can't help yelling at it. You know, it's really mean to laugh, to yell and scream at people. But for some reason, we think it's okay to yell and scream at technology because it doesn't have any emotions that will get offended. All right, well, anyway, also wanted to have one more thing in here. My friend Roy McDougall, he does the pictures for the Vinnie Eastwood Show and Guerrilla Media, and I sent him this concept of, Tickle Me Elmo. Well, this one's Tickle Me Chemo, and it's got Elmo in there in a little hospital bed attached to all these chemo plugs and all of this kind of stuff, you know, with blood, and his eyes are all bloodshot, and he's just basically like wasting away like you do when you're on chemo. And now, this might be offensive to people, right, when they see this image. Go to my thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/humor.html. That's humor with a U and an O-U-R. Or, you know, just email me and I'll find it for you. It's also on my Facebook wall. And this is the thing. Chemotherapy kills between 70 and 95% of patients. It's expensive, ineffective, dangerous, and it's the only thing medicine has to fight cancer with, which is now infecting between one-third and one-half of the population at some point in their life. And two things cure cancer cheaply, effectively, and safely. And they are, of course, not even allowed in mainstream medicine. Number one being hemp oil, the real oil from the Rick Simpson method. And number two being intravenous vitamin C. Don't be duped. All right. Don't become Tickle Me Chemo. My very special guest is Suzanne Posel. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hello. How are you?
You know, somewhat fabulous is my standard response. All right. So, let's just kind of introduce you. For those who don't know who Suzanne Posel is, she's the CEO and driving force, a machine-type lady who's responsible for OccupyCorporatism.com. And I'm curious just exactly what your background is and how you really got into doing this and why you started OccupyCorporatism.com and when.
I started it about a year ago. Well, it's a little over a year now. I was a stay-at-home mom and just got sick of being lied to, woke up to the financial crisis. That's what woke me up. Realized that it's fiat, not money, which I have to correct my son all the time when he asks for money. It's not money, it's fiat. And spent a year digging into everything, every conspiracy theory, researching everything, going through the conspiracy theories and the conspiracy facts, and decided to write my own articles and tell people what I was researching. So that's where the name Occupy Corporatism came about, because I realized everything is incorporated, including our governments and our countries and our cities and our towns and everything. So I wanted people to be aware that we don't live in countries and cities. We live in corporations and what that means. So that's why I started the website, and I got picked up by every alternative news source almost instantly. I credit that to the fact that I'm a woman. There's not a lot of women in alternative media.
No, there's not.
Yeah. And started doing radio shows and then started finding out that some of my peers were not so on board, kind of had their own agendas, so I had to disassociate myself from some people. But then I ended up, Danny Ramiro was nice enough to give me a show on AFR, and so I have that now, the Region 10 Report on AFR on Thursdays. And so I'm just writing, I'm just digging into the news as much as possible, putting out as many articles as I can. I do this like 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, in between taking care of the kids and homeschooling and cooking and cleaning.
So did you go through that real stress, kind of depression, disillusion period that a lot of us went through as well, once you suddenly realized not everything was as it seemed? And more to the point, everything is much worse.
Yeah, I had a psychosomatic flu-like breakdown. I thought I had the flu for 2 weeks. I didn't have a fever. I kept checking my temperature. I felt sick. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. And then after that passed, I was no longer in shock. And so I could then start to function again. But absolutely, it was almost debilitating at first.
I felt that with myself as well. Just, I don't know. Everything lost meaning. To a degree?
Yeah, everything I had been taught, everything my mother said, and I was teaching, I was homeschooling my son, and everything I was teaching him. We started watching every documentary we could find, reading every article, listening to every radio show, talk radio we could find, and the kids went along with this. So this was 24 hours a day in the house. My husband and I just, it was voracious. We just couldn't believe that everything is a lie. Everything is a lie. And that's hard to grasp. That none of this is true. And so it's like a hamster in a wheel, is what I say, because you're spinning your wheels and you're not getting anywhere. But you think you are, because you got this house and you got this car, but it's not really yours because it's on credit. but you're working toward the American dream, but that doesn't really matter because if your house was securitized, they're going to take it from you anyway. The job doesn't matter. The federal notes don't matter. So nothing matters. And that's that's when I went into my freak out.
Yeah, I got really angry, and I don't know, I was still working as a salesman, and I don't know, I literally couldn't handle it, sort of thing. Once you realize that everything that you're doing doesn't matter, you can't be bothered doing it.
Right. Right, and that's, what's the point? So, you know, homeschooling my kid made sense because I didn't want him to be indoctrinated. But even the simple things like you tell your kid, because I said so, that's indoctrination. I want my kid to question me. And even though it backfires in my face quite often, I'm glad that he stands up. And I have a younger daughter. She's 2. So she's not there yet. She's in the tantrum phase. So she just throws herself on the floor and starts screaming. But my son's 6. So he questions everything and wants to know why. And I try hard to facilitate that, even though sometimes it doesn't work out to my benefit as a parent, because I don't want him to just blindly follow anything, and like I did.
Yeah. I always wondered that that mentality is like, if you're trying to raise a kid in a system that's a lie, how best to raise them? Is it best to raise them and let them know and go into the world with open eyes, knowing that it's all BS and that most of the people who will tell you what to do or tell you what to think are simply moron scum slaves, and they don't know what the hell they're talking about, so you shouldn't believe anything they say unless they've got evidence, you know, that kind of thing, and how much more difficult that would make parenting rather than they just do it because I said so. Cuts out a lot of the middlemen, you know. There's no arguing. There's no
It's difficult. I question. I don't want him to not be able to function in society. I want him to be able to have what we call normal things. But I want him to understand the position. If things are going to keep going the way that they're going, I want him to understand what's happening to him so that he's not surprised. I don't want him to think that, I don't want him to define himself by what he has, but by who he is, and do something because he loves it. Because what I do right now, I absolutely love. And I started doing this out of nowhere. And in a year, I'm pretty successful at it, and I enjoy it. And I'm a better researcher. And I cover topics more inclusively because I understand things better, and I'm still learning. And if you go back into my first articles that I wrote, they're very different than the ones I write now, where I would just cover one topic, and now I try and piece together what's going on right now and what happened yesterday and what happened 2 years ago and how everything all fits together. And not just what one person's saying, but what the whole chorus is saying, so that you understand where the agendas are. Because when everyone keeps using the same buzzword and keeps repeating the same thing, then you understand that that's an agenda and that they have specific meaning in what's happening. And it's not just arbitrary.
Yeah. The most irritating point in a conversation is when I recognize that the person across from me is just repeating themselves, and I say, all of a sudden, we're not having a conversation. I'm being propagandized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's and another really irritating thing that happens in conversation, other than just being propagandized, is people saying the 3 most hated words: "I don't care."
Yeah, which is a blatant lie.
We must care.
Everybody does. They really do. They care even to the base level. They don't want to die. Of course they care. Even if you care about keeping up with the Joneses, you still care.
But,
yeah.
Well, I'm glad to see that you still retain somewhat of a sense of humor, much like I have. And What I found is the yelling and screaming and the New World Order is going to get you and that kind of thing wakes you out of your peaceful, I'm a slave and it's happy, it's nice, there's fruit-flavored lollipops and rainbows and gumdrops. It wakes you out of that. But once you get woken up, the yelling and the screaming and the propensity to collapse into a fetal position suddenly is no longer worth it. And then you've got to figure out, okay, now I am awake. What the hell do I do about it? And it's either you do anything you can, like let's say you research, you start a website, or in my case, radio show or video or whatever, because I also wanted to be a filmmaker, would have wanted to make movies or something, but unfortunately, those are really expensive to make, and being a person of conscience, didn't really want to associate with all of those type things, and I just instead wanted to get down on the grassroots level and just help people there. And so that was my talent, that was my scheme, and that's what I've done. I've become very successful at it. And likewise, you've done precisely the same thing. The other side of the spectrum is once you have woken up and you've gotten that kind of fear and frustration and that fetal positioning type of stuff out of the way, how exactly do you deal with it, right, emotionally speaking? And, you know, my base conclusion is just got to use humor. It's the only thing that'll still be there when everything else fails you.
I agree. I try to laugh as much as possible because it's so ridiculous. It's... They're almost a caricature of what they think that they are. And it's funny to me. Everything is so over the top. It's really like a Hollywood movie when you watch CNN or when you watch C-SPAN. Or when I saw Obama today, you know, talking about these executive orders on gun control, it was a comedy of itself. You know, he points over, you know, off to the side and says, I'm going to sit down at that desk right after I'm done here and I'm going to go sign that piece of paper and I'm going to do that. And I'm like, okay, well, you go do that. Like, all right. Well, meanwhile, you know, everybody's buying their guns and getting ready for it. So you go do that. Have a good time.
Yeah, I do find Obama speeches, you know, really hilarious and I think back when I woke up during the Bush administration, when he would lie, you'd notice that there was a number of different lies contained within a single sentence, sort of thing. Like so many lies per second, it's like I don't know if you had a BS emitter, you know, like on Aliens, you know how they've got that little motion detector thingy. And now, evolving on from that, whenever Obama speaks, you hear this raucous coming out of my house, you know, I'm going to restore the economy. I'm going to create jobs. I'm going to stop the wireless wiretaps. You're killing me. You're killing me, quite literally. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're going to make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday, and Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh, yeah. Sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time, it's business time.
It's business, it's business time.
Welcome back.
What do you mean it's business time? Oh.
It's business.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the sexiest 2 hours in talk radio where it's business time every day of the week, especially on Wednesday nights. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We're on American Freedom Radio five nights a week for your daily dose of conspiracy and comedy. And Suzanne and I were talking over the break, discussing the elements of fear. I think there's three elements that I've come to understand about what fear is. Firstly, it's a survival thing. All right. When you're operating under your thought process and it's fear, usually the part of your brain that's making the decisions is the lower cortex, otherwise known as the reptilian brain, the thing that governs your fight or flight mechanism. So you're either going to tense up in preparation for combat, or you're going to loosen up in preparation for running away. The adrenaline starts flowing, that kind of thing. It's designed to keep you alive and make snap decisions like that. The problem is when you're dealing with things that are intellectual, okay? Like, for example, a vaccine being contaminated with live avian flu virus or something like that isn't actually a threat to you unless it's being plunged into your veins. But when you learn about it, your brain still acts as though it's a threat, okay? And you react in the same way. So there's that element. Second element is when you have that fear response, it stops you from thinking clearly, all right? That's why fear is being sold down the tubes every single day on the mainstream media. There's a murder here, there's a shooting there, there's a this, that, and the other, and da-da-da-da, and there's an economic crisis, whatever. And sure enough, nobody in the United States is capable of thinking anymore because they're so fracking afraid because they keep plugging into the stuff which keeps them inside this really, really tiny little thought capacity realm called the fear-based paradigm. And lastly, fear can sometimes be the great motivator. The reason why I'm doing all this is not because I'm brave, is not because I'm angry. It's actually because I'm deathly afraid of ever being employed again. Now, seriously, I am employophobic. I've been to two job interviews since I quit my last job, couldn't handle it. All right, had this close to a panic attack. First panic attack I ever had was when the cops arrested me. Had a panic attack in the cells, and that was the first time I'd ever experienced anything like that. And now being employed is the source of my panic and fear. And being self-employed, on the other hand, keeps that kind of crap at bay. Got to do it for some reason or another. Suzanne Posel is my guest. Welcome back.
Hello. I agree with you. I love my job. I absolutely love my job. And I'm not going to quit. I'm not going back to go. I have a paralegal degree, and I worked in a law firm for a little while, and I would never go back to that. And I wouldn't go back to retail. That's just stupid. I can't deal with those stupid people all day long. I just can't do it. I don't care about what's popular. I barely watch. I don't watch mainstream television. We don't even have a television in our house. I don't keep up with the Joneses. My purse does not match my shoes. I don't wear makeup because of all of the lead and the parabens in them. So I just wouldn't make a good slave anymore. I would be useless. So I like my job.
Yeah. There was another thing that I didn't like about working is that the people that you're forced to work with and associate with, they're not the people I would choose to associate with of my own free will. They're people I'm forced to associate with because I don't have a choice, right? That's what I really didn't like about the world that I was living in is I had no choice from day to day, you know. Had to associate with these people. They were all vacuous, slimy, BMW-craving, drug-fracked, soulless, psychopathic trash. Really? Yes. And nowadays, the only people I associate with, or pretty much exclusively, are people who believe in me, people who inspire me, or people who I can actually accomplish something and work with. I don't have to work for anybody anymore, and that is just so freeing to me. It was exactly what I was looking for my whole life, and I didn't even realize that it was an option until now.
Yes, I agree. I spent... Before I did this, I spent 5 years on an organic farm, and I did the bookkeeping, and I did all the administrative work, but basically we lived and worked on the farm, and that really changed my mindset on everything, and we were very isolated, so we didn't have access to, you know, there was no phone ringing in the house, we had our cell phones, but there was no landline, there was no television, You couldn't, there were no noises. It was just the animals at night. And it was very liberating. It changed everything. So when I came back to the city, I've tried to replicate that by staying away from everything, you know, that makes the city and not participating in that. Because the mindset that I got on the farm was that what's important is the people around you and the people you depend on and the earth that you have around you and all the cycles and getting back to that and getting away from everything else. If you can do it, if you can really do it, you know, get just cut off everything and go somewhere and isolate yourself and just really get to know the people that are around you. And you learn a lot about people and you learn how to depend on people in a way that is not suffocating to who you are, but that everyone provides a function. And so the job gets done. And when we all work in tandem, we create these beautiful things like all of this food that we produced. And that's a very beautiful thing. And you can, there were interns that would come on the farm for the season and work. And these are people that, it's kind of funny. If you live with somebody, you get to know who they really are in about 3 weeks. In about 3 weeks, everybody on the farm would either be who they really were or they would leave. So we would know what's going on with every single person and, whether or not we could get to know this person or whether or not they were going to be staying around in about 3 weeks. And that told me a lot about the human condition and how people portray themselves on the outside and how difficult it is when you really get to know someone, what cues to look for in people when they're trying to take you down a road or trying to convince you of things that aren't true. I learned a lot about personality, about body language, about tone, how to read cues, how to get to know people in a way that you know what they mean, and how we give ourselves away when we don't even realize it. And so now that I do what I do, I'm like you. I only associate with people that I want to associate with. I don't have to associate with anyone. I could just do what I do and never answer the phone and just keep producing articles and get on the radio and never have a guest and just do what I do. But everyone that I talk to personally is all people that I choose to talk to. And I can choose not to talk to someone. And it doesn't mean that I'm dependent on them. I can still do my job. So it's very liberating to actually get to know people without any sense of dependency, or that if what they do or say is going to affect my ability to live or die.
Well, in fact, you know, that's the interesting thing. You mentioned the word dependency. What's the opposite of dependency? Independence.
Right.
Right. And I think that's how we were supposed to live. That's the natural human state, is being independent. And I don't know about you, Suzanne, but I do, do the social networking and the Skyping rather prolifically. And I must say, I have fallen in love with the block function. You know, somebody comes at me, Vinny, you're an evil dark angel manifesting as some kind of light angel. You block. Never hear from that person again. Oh God, that's good.
Oh, I do. On my website, I do not allow comments because honestly, my website is for information purposes only. Now on the Facebook page that correlates to the website, I allow people to comment all the time, but I constantly monitor that Facebook page and I block at least two people a day. At least. Because if you have an agenda, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. That's why WordPress offers free websites. That's why you can start your own Twitter account or your own Facebook page and get your own friends and spin your wheels over there.
It's a free market.
Yes. Well, supposedly, yeah.
And what I found is it's also a free social market. And what I always say is that, look, bro, there's 7 billion people on the planet. I don't want to hang out with you specifically. Not when there's another couple. Not when there's billions of other options out there. I think I can find somebody a little bit more entertaining, a little bit more intelligent, and a little bit more supportive than you. Blah.
Right. Well, I get people now that tell me, oh, you have to cover this. I'm actually getting threatened by you have to cover this.
Or I else get that too. It's like, dude, you got busted fingers, you can't type a blog up, you know?
Right.
Why does everybody else have to take responsibility for what you think is important? Why do you take responsibility for it, for frack's sake?
Right. I mean, they bring me all of this, you know, evidence. Okay, well, evidence is very important to me. You know, I cover topics that I can show people because I understand that everyone's still being marketed to and everyone is still looking for proof. Okay, fine, I get that. So when I write an article, I try to show you as much proof as to what I'm saying as possible. But if I can't provide any proof to you, then it's commentary. And so I have a radio show now. And or there's tons of radio shows. You can go listen to commentary all you want, but I'm not going to write an article on it. I'm not going to write an article on a supposition or a perception because these are the rabbit holes that we go down all the time. And so we're spinning our wheels over here on the left while something bad is happening on the right. And I don't want to participate in that. So
I see it as kind of part and parcel because there's some people like you who are just so on the ball with what I've come to call credibility. All right, some people who you can't argue with because they're using the facts, and me, I consider myself incredible. in more ways than one, and I don't know a whole lot of things, and I can't prove a lot of these things. I think, but I reserve judgment, and I make sure that I'm open to discussing it and allow evidence to be presented. You know, I don't deny anything, and I do practice discernment in that way. But I'm conscious of the fact that every fact that I thought that I've ever learned has since been disproven.
That's true, and I had this conversation with a listener. Not of my show, of another radio show, about this yesterday. I told him, look, I present facts to you that may or may not be true. I don't know. And my paradigm shifts constantly. And what I thought to be true when I woke up is different than the truth that I think 2 years later. Absolutely. And I just did an article. I watched this documentary last night, How to Start a Revolution, about Gene Sharp and his work from 1973, this book that's been going around all over the world. It's called From Dictatorship to Democracy. And he started the Albert Einstein Institute in 1983. And it's funded by lovely people like the Ford Foundation and the RAND Corporation and the International Republican Institute. And what happened in Serbia between 1993 and 2003, I think, or 1998, I'm sorry, is the International Republican Institute went in and saw that this organization, COPTOR, was using nonviolent resistance in order to overthrow their government. So this IRI said, hey, wait a minute, that's a good idea. So they went and spoke to the leaders of this movement and they learned everything they could about it. And so they've taken that idea and they've inspired people all over the world to replicate that. And this is what we call the Arab Springs. Now, every time this happens, the guy gets overthrown, but then somebody worse comes in. And that's where the U.S. foreign policy aspect of it is, the co-opting part of it manifests itself. When Gaddafi was taken out, we have now the National Transitional Council, which is a de facto government. They're a group of terrorists, and they work with the U.S. foreign interests. The same thing with Saddam Hussein. The same thing with the idea actually goes all, you can go back to Castro being funded to help overthrow Batista.
Mm, you know, that's called being castrated. We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with Suzanne Posel, from OccupyCorporatism.com. She gets that a lot. We'll be right back at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's our final segment here with the fabulous, illustrious, gorgeous, various other nice adjectives guest, Suzanne Posel. Welcome back.
Wow. You're making me blush.
I do that. Now, moving on, is there anything that you you normally stray away from talking about? I mean, you talked about how you like to back up almost everything you say with facts. Is there anything that you think about that isn't based on facts, like just based on a feeling?
Well, yeah. Usually I start out with a hypothesis, and then I try to prove myself right. And then usually sometimes I do, but sometimes I don't, and it ends up being an article that I didn't expect. Taking this gun control thing, I see that Obama is working with China a lot, and I followed the BRICS nations quite a bit. And so I see that he's kind of pissing off Netanyahu and that whole faction over there. So the idea was proposed to me today, and it's been mulling in it actually right before I got on the show. It's really interesting to me. What if Obama is scaring the American public into arming themselves so that a takeover using NATO forces or anything wouldn't be possible, because everyone would be armed to the teeth? And why would you want to send in your troops where everyone is this trigger happy redneck ready to just, you know, shoot everybody in sight with their, you know, AK-47s or whatever they got? That would be interesting to me. So can I back that up with facts? No. But
sure. I don't think there's any law against doing that yet.
If you want to convince somebody to do something and you can't come out and say it, it would seem logically to me, illogical using psychology, that you would try and get them to do, convince them of the opposite, so they would end reverse up doing psychology. What you wanted to do. Yeah.
So Obama's using, allegedly, reverse psychology on the American people. I'm going to take your guns so that they cling to them tighter than ever.
Right. Because the biggest fear is that, oh my God, he could sign an executive order and NATO forces would be on the streets here in the United States and there would be a total takeover, tyrannical government, everything the Bilderberg Group and the CFR want. What if Obama said, you know what, I'm not in with your CFR thing. I'm going to go do what the BRICS nations are doing over here. I kind of like them, you know, because I grew up with communist ideology and Putin is a communist and so are the Chinese. And they're backing their fiat in gold. And they want to kill the U.S. dollar and bring the world to a gold standard and end the tyranny of Zionist-controlled and central bank-controlled countries. So I'm going to go hang out with those dudes. And meanwhile, I'm going to trick my population into arming themselves so that you can't come over here and kill us all. So
it's kind of like problem-reaction-solution in reverse. It's exactly. Solution, reaction, problem.
Right, right. So in that respect, he would want people to hate him so much that they would arm themselves. And that's exactly what's happened. The gun manufacturers can't make enough guns. The bullets are on back order. The police departments are rationing their bullets. So obviously the citizens have taken the bait. And if that's true, now I know that he's been selling foreclosed homes to China. I know that last year he allocated all of our natural gas to be sold to China. He stopped the Keystone pipeline that would have helped the Zionist central bankers. He stopped talking to Netanyahu, stopped having conversations, didn't go to war with Iran like he was supposed to.
And now he's appointed, what's his name, as his defense secretary. And I just was listening to Kevin Barrett's show before this one. And I must say, if Kevin's listening, you did a great show to Damon. And they had Gordon Duff on, who played a recording. And the current defense secretary, I forget what his name is, the one who's just Hagel. Come in, saying that the Palestinian people have been living in chains.
Yeah, thank God.
For a defense secretary, for the Defense Secretary of the United States to say it, let alone anybody in mainstream media, is extraordinary.
Well, IAPAC had a huge problem, and IAPAC's been running our foreign policy for decades. In fact, 3 months before JFK got shot in the face, he told the State Department that IAPAC was not to give out any more money to lobby unless they registered all their money and gave out amounts and who they were giving it to. And when they refused and they passed their deadline, the State Department put a kibosh on their ability to lobby in the United States. Well, after he died, legislation was passed so that no lobbyist group would ever have to let anyone know who they're talking to, who they're giving money to, and how much they're giving him.
Well, you know what? I trust the Charlie Wilson's war, Zen master type response to this. We'll see.
Right. We'll see.
You know, what I get irritated with, Suzanne, is that when a new politician comes in, people have all this hope that they'll do this, and then they let them fulfill their agenda and then find out whether or not they were telling the truth before they came into office. But by then, it's too late. By the time you've seen what they're really about, whereas you have a look at Obama's background, or rather his campaign promises before being elected, and what he actually did after being elected, it's virtually the opposite.
Right. So it's very interesting to me. That hypothesis was posed to me today, and I'm going to go back and look and see. I've been following the BRICS nations, and I think it's very interesting what they want to bring to the table as opposed to the other version.
Maybe he's not doing it on purpose. Maybe it's simply an unintended consequence.
It could be. I mean, the only people who know the truth are not talking, and the only thing that you and I and the rest of our peers have to go on is supposition and the little bit of what we call evidence and facts that we have.
What I really don't like, though, is people who claim that something's a fact when it's not. That for me is really difficult to deal with personally. Just as a radio show host, I mean, I barely claim anything to be a fact unless I know that it is. And a lot of people, they claim that their opinions are facts when they're not.
Right. Well, we've been taught over the years to believe that opinions are facts. News is not news anymore. It's just a bunch of people sitting around talking about what happened, and then they talk about what they think about it, and then everybody regurgitates that at the water cooler the next day. It's not like, you know, Walter Cronkite is sitting up there talking anymore.
Yeah. Reminds me, I put my dad's batch, I think it was years ago. He has his calendar, right, you know, just a normal calendar, but it's also got a fish expectation. Like, it's got, like, half a fish for only half as much good fishing viability and that kind of thing. It's like, how exactly did they plan a year in advance what the fishing would be like? And considering this calendar gets sold all over the country, you know, what did you do? Get a whole bunch of old fishermen in a room together and just go, oh, I reckon, you know?
That's probably what a lot of this is like in general. Yeah. So what do you do? You know, that's why I try not to fear people, because there's really nothing to be afraid of. I don't think I don't want people to be stunned like a deer in the headlights when they come up with an issue. I don't want them to start freaking out and buying more bags of Cheetos and more gallons of water. I want them to critically think and sit down and maybe go to sleep on it. You know, maybe you don't have to make a decision today or tomorrow or next week. It'll be okay.
Yeah. I mean, Cheetos never prosper.
They last a long time, though.
Well, the problem is there's not an awful lot of nutrition contained within, so... Oh, well. Regardless, there's also another thing that I think truthers really need to be focused on, is maintaining their relationships with their significant others. And when you become a truther and you're married to somebody who hasn't woken up yet, that can be really, really hard. Me personally,
I'm very lucky.
Oh, yeah, me too. I'm just so grateful. Like last night I was watching the TV with Sarah, and on the news they were saying that there's this new virus breaking out, and you know what their symbol is for a virus these days? You know, the image that they put up when they're trying to explain that there's a big viral outbreak?
No.
A needle in a little thing, like a vaccine, extracting it. And Sarah was like, isn't that interesting that they associate viruses with vaccines, considering it's the vaccines that spread the viruses, you know? It's like, I love it when my baby notices the New World Order doublespeak.
Yeah. I'm very lucky. My husband's the same way. He'll, even when he's at work, he'll drop me an article. Did you see this? You know, I'm very lucky. Yeah. He's very supportive.
Yeah. And that's basically the greatest thing you can really ever have is, you know, behind every great man, there's a strong woman and then there's vice versa, you know, basically you can't really be a truly great person and be all you can be, as the, American military would say, without somebody who's really there with you all day, every day, soaking it up and behind you 100%, you know. Sarah supported me for years before I even started making a dime out of doing this, and wouldn't be able to do it without her, and I presume it's the same for you. Suzanne, thank you very much for coming on the show with us today, and ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening, and we'll be right back next hour.